Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, episode number 15. I'm Chet Haas on the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team. And today we have
Mark Sagaitis from the Android Location and Context team.
That's how you pronounce the last name. I wasn't going to try it on my own. All right. So we've been thinking for a while recently about learning more about location services and the APIs and all the stuff that you can do on the devices. And instead of actually spending a little bit of effort and writing apps around, we thought it'd be a lot easier for us to just talk to someone actually on the team. So here's Mark to tell us everything that we should have learned already.
What is it that you do on the location team?
So I manage the location client team. So it's the team that focuses on sort of computing location on the phone and also sort of activity recognition on the phone. So detecting kind of where is the user and what are they doing.
So is this the new feature where it'll say that you've been running or you've been bicycling?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And but how do you know if it's a stationary bike?
Stationary bike is very tricky. Yeah, okay. That's one we're looking at.
Okay.
There's vibrations in there that we might be able to tell from the accelerometer.
Okay. And the pulse rate. And, yeah. So computing location is done. There's GPS. There's also what? Triangulation with like wireless detectors or whatever.
How does that work?
So there's a couple of technologies, right? The two main ones are sort of GPS and network location. So network is basically based on Wi-Fi and cell towers. And they're complementary technologies, right? One of them, so GPS, it's really good for high accuracy outdoor location. While network location is good when you're indoors because GPS doesn't work indoors. So high level, the way it works, right? GPS is based on satellite information, so it's a bunch of satellites. We try and get timing information off of that to figure out where the device is. While network location is based on, you take sort of known positions of either cell towers or Wi-Fi access points, and use that to try and estimate where the user is.
Okay, so yeah, how do you know where the Wi-Fi router is or the network access point? Because I know sometimes I'll be sitting on my laptop at home and it'll show me the weather for San Jose, which is, I assume, associated with the ISP that I'm going through.
Right. If it's on your laptop, it's likely something like IP location, which is like a third technology.
Yeah.
So for the Wi-Fi and cell towers, we do it through data collection. So basically, if we can sort of get GPS points that are tied with a particular Wi-Fi access point, so like a phone does a Wi-Fi scan and associates a GPS point to it, we can use that information to then say, okay, this Wi-Fi access point is in this particular location, or this cell tower is in this particular location.
How often do we have to update that? Because I would assume that people would change your Wi-Fi names regularly, or what if? How do you know that it's not like someone's access point from their cell phone, right? So they're tethering to their tablet that's Wi-Fi only, and then they're walking around. How do we know that the location is what it was when we recorded it?
So that's a really good question. There's a couple of ways of figuring that out. One is actually the MAC address. There's usually a special bit in there that says, like, I'm a portable hotspot. I'm a hotspot that moves around.
Oh.
So we can use that to say, let's throw these out. And then there's certain access points that won't do that. So in that case, what we do is sort of based on the data collection pattern, we can figure out that, well, we've seen this access point in one location and another, okay, this is probably something that's moving around. Let's not use it for location.
Yeah, or if the Wi-Fi name is Android AP, that's another.
That's right, yeah, that's a good strong signal.
Yeah. So that's GPS, and what about indoor? Are there other technologies we can use?
So indoor, the main focus is Wi-Fi location. So with Wi-Fi,
so like when I'm in a mall, I've noticed that I get really good fixed. That's Wi-Fi.
It'll depend a little bit on the mall, but that's usually like basically there's certain malls that Google has kind of an indoor location technology for, and that one it's usually Wi-Fi, and that's kind of the strongest signal. Like so, cell towers have a really large range, right? So you see them from really far away,
right?
So they're not really good for indoor location, but Wi-Fi, like, it has kind of a small range, and when you see multiple access points, if you can get kind of a really good model of where these access points are and kind of how their signal propagates to an environment, you can get kind of a really accurate location for that user.
I see. So we have maps of the mall. We can figure out, hey, that might actually bounce off of this, and that's why it's going
to something like that, yeah.
So don't go to the mall when you're trying to hide from your family because they know where your device is.
Well, that actually reminds me. I've noticed that sometimes my GPS is really confused when I'm in like downtown San Francisco or something like that. What is it with tall buildings that makes GPS work so poorly?
Right. So these like urban canyons are basically the signal from satellites. So it's a really weak signal, right? It's a hard signal that's really difficult to pick up. So when there are tall buildings, it bounces off of it, and you get kind of this multipath effect, and that makes it really hard for the GPS chip to compute exactly. Like it's trying to get super accurate timing information, right? Like nanosecond. Kind of figuring out like how long did it take from a signal for it to kind of go from space down to your phone and try and filter out as much noise as possible. So tall buildings make that particularly challenging. So that's why we have an API called the Fuse Location Provider. And really its job is to figure out, like, okay, in this situation, I should be using GPS because it's trustworthy. In this situation, it's probably not going to work that well. Let me use Wi-Fi or let me use cell towers, that sort of thing. So basically our goal is really to make it easy for a developer to just kind of say, okay, I don't really want to know exactly when should I be using which technology. I just want location. And then the Fuse Location Provider's job is really to figure that out and say, okay, in current situation, GPS accuracy has been dropping. You're probably in an urban canyon or you're entering a building. Like, these are situations where GPS will start cutting out and then it switches over to Wi-Fi.
So is that a Play Services API?
Yes.
Okay. So then you basically, you ask for like a fine location and then it'll just compute it for you. You don't have to worry about anything else.
That's right. Yeah. And there's kind of a couple of different things you can ask. So location, like, there's kind of two main things to think about. One is accuracy and the other one is power. So you can basically say, okay, I want a high accuracy location. And that kind of tells us, okay, it's fine to burn a lot of power. Basically, like, I'm maps in the foreground or something like that, right? I'm an app that's really, I really want as accurate a location as possible. So do everything you can to come up with a location. And that's kind of a parameter that can get passed. And in that case, we'll use sort of both GPS and network location, merge them together. And then the other mode is you can ask for balanced power instead, which is kind of a different location request. And the goal there is to kind of think of like a background app that wants occasional location updates, but doesn't want to, you know, drain your battery very quickly. Mm-hmm. So in that mode, that's kind of another parameter you pass into the API to say, like, this is the type of location I want.
But so it's always the developer who chooses.
Yes.
So it's not like because you said foreground activity. I'm thinking, you know, sometimes I'm running like a fitness app, right?
Yep.
But then I'm running a podcast app. And so I switch the fitness app to the background. But I still want it to record highly accurate information. I don't want to think I'm in the background. It's okay, right? So yep. There's nothing I can do as a user, right? Like that, if the developer wrote the fitness app to record accurate location information, that'll continue to happen in the background.
That's right, yeah. So it's really up to the developer of the app to make sure that they kind of understand the differences between sort of when do they want to be, you know, high accuracy, high power, or when do they want sort of kind of a more balanced power, something that's more always on. And really the rough rule is, you know, if it's something that the user kind of explicitly started, right? Then it's fine to go like high accuracy. If it's something that's just going to be always on in the background, sort of trying to understand your context, then you probably want to go to something like balanced power, and put it an interval of something long. So the other parameter is kind of like how much time do you want between location computations? And that parameter is really important for power because, you know, the longer we can wait before we have to wake up the device to compute a location, the more power we can save.
Right.
So as the developer says, okay, I'm okay with getting location every 5 minutes or 10 minutes, or maybe it's a weather widget, which is like once every 12 hours is fine for me. That allows us to save a lot of power.
So you said you're doing activity detection too, right? So can you use that to, like, when the phone is laying on the desk for 2 hours, can you like know that there's nothing happening? I'm not sure exactly what kind of hardware you can listen to detect that the phone's been picked up, right? But do you have ways to do that?
Yes. And there's basically, there's a parameter in the API that allows the developer to say, like, I'm okay with this much. Basically, I'm okay if the user, if there's movement that's not too far, right? I'm okay with missing that. It's basically minimum displacement, something like that. And the idea behind that is, like, if exactly this, right? The phone, most of the days, is going to be still on a desk. And, you know, some apps, like, they really, really care that, like, as soon as you move a little bit, like, pick up on that. So then we have to kind of still be aggressive about waking up and checking if the location changes. But if the developer gives us this hint about, like, well, I'm okay with missing, like, you know, 100 meters of location the first time somebody moves, then we'll use activity detection to figure out, okay, this is probably a good time to go in low power mode. The phone's not moving. And then we can kind of periodically check, oh, has things changed? You know, did the accelerometer change, the activity change? And then say, oh, okay, something has changed. Let me turn on location again.
So is the general, I'm trying to understand the model of using the API in general. Do they construct an object and pass in all these parameters, and then they get callbacks when there's information that's interesting according to those parameters? Or are they constantly constructing a new object saying, well, now I'm in a different mode, I want to do this?
So it's pretty much the first one. So Usually it's you construct one location request object and pass in the parameters that are most important to you, and then usually leave it in that mode until, there's going to be a callback. There's kind of two sets of callbacks. There's one which is a standard callback. That's kind of like if an app connects to us and then wants just location instantly, they'll connect with a callback and we'll just pass locations down through that callback. The other way is through a pending intent. And the idea is there is for more like background apps. Like, a lot of apps want to just be able to do sort of always on background location. And those apps don't, like, say they're asking for every 10 minutes they want a new location update. It's kind of a background service. You don't want that service necessarily to be awake and connected the entire time and kind of using up RAM on the device. So what you can do instead of using a callback, like a callback means that your app has to, the process has to be running and be connected, right? While pending intent, the nice thing about that is like your app can completely go, you know, get killed by the system, go away, and then the next time we're ready to compute a location, we'll trigger the pending intent, that'll wake up the app again. So that's kind of the model that, that works a little better to save power and save, especially save RAM for the user.
Interesting. So it seems like a much better model than I want to have a service that always knows where it is, like, you know, a fitness service, just in case you want to run the app, then I've got the updated information for you. But
that's
it's,
right.
Then that thing is always going to be on.
Right? Yep, exactly.
So does that also mean that if you write a, like you could write a power sucking service, basically, you could even call your app that power sucking service where it asked for high accuracy location, but it ran in the background the entire time?
Yes.
So until the battery died 2 hours later.
Yep. Yeah. That's definitely possible.
You could sell it as a battery tester.
That's right.
$1.99.
Yeah. and that's why there's battery blaming, right? So like the app that uses, you know, location, like the system allows us to kind of automatically say, okay, this, you know, these Wi-Fi scans, well, they should be attributed to this app, and the power cost of that goes to that. So when the user sees their battery dashboard, they can say, oh, this is the app that's draining battery. Is it worth it for me? That sort of thing.
Right. I guess, I mean, developers are still spinning up on all this new stuff anyway. Like, I remember social apps a couple of years ago were really bad citizens for that. Like, I was not running that thing, and yet, you know, you could see the little GPS icon there, and it would report, you know, that it knew where I was or wanted more information or something, or you go look at the battery stats and you're like, why are they tracking all this information when I'm not running it? It was basically that. So I was wondering, so power consumption, you talked a lot about that. Like that's a huge concern, right? Because like you do something like navigation with the screen on and you can sort of watch your battery go down, right?
Yeah.
So people are very aware of how much it uses. I know that we've been doing things in the platform in some recent releases to help batch events, so that you don't have to constantly sort of sit there in an active loop and pull and get information. Instead, you can say, hey, I'd like a bunch of stuff, and you can be flexible when you submit it. Is there stuff that the platform automatically does for you in terms of batching, you know, the request to get the location or waking up the app or the background service or whatever to tell it that information, or is it all on the shoulder of the developer to give you that information?
That's a good question, actually. So I think the goal of that is like we try to be the ones that try and handle that for the developer so that they don't have to, especially when they're registering for things like location and activity recognition. So in the background, like the service which runs in Google Play Services, it'll try to figure out like, okay, I want to wake up at this interval, and oh, this other thing needs to wake up at this other interval. Let me match our alarms together so that we wake up at the same time, and basically only wake up the device sort of once, do all our processing that we need to, and go back to sleep. So we try and do as much of that as possible and kind of just allow apps to give us hints as to what, like, how much can we do, right? How much can we batch? How long can I delay computing a location for it to still be okay for the use case of the app? So that's why we have, like, a couple of parameters in the API where they say, like, oh, I'm okay with, you know, high accuracy or balanced power, and right. Oh, I'm okay with this interval versus this interval of kind of location requests. And everything else we try and handle ourselves so that we can use kind of either batch our own alarms together or even use kind of new hardware features that have been added in KitKat for things like sensor batching, for example, which allows us to sort of tell the accelerometer, okay, batch a bunch of events for us, and I don't need to be awake while these events are coming in. So see, I need like 5 seconds of accelerometer data. It used to be that I had to kind of wake up the CPU, stay awake for 5 seconds while you get a bunch of accelerometer data, and then go back to sleep, or like, you know, process it at the end of that and go back to sleep. But some of the new APIs we added in KitKat were to basically say, okay, just batch all that data yourself, keep this running buffer on the accelerometer, and then like, when I wake up, the data is already there. So it just kind of flushes it and says, here's all the data, so we can wake up for a very short period of time and go back to sleep. And that really saves a lot of power. The cost of the CPU is one of the biggest costs that we have in terms of power. These batching APIs really help.
So if I go for a 2-hour walk, I assume that, you know, the accelerometer is measuring all that so that it can do that activity detection, say you walked for 2 hours. How, I mean, is that just all recorded in a giant buffer for 2 hours, or does it wake up every 15 seconds and process it? Like, what's the workload involved there?
So it all depends on the what the app asks for. So for the activity recognition API, it's built a little bit similar to the location API, where there's a parameter that the developer can pass in and say, like, I want activity recognition at this interval, right? I want it every 3 minutes, or I want it every 5 minutes, or that sort of thing. And we'll wake up at that interval to do the computation. So usually rough guide, you know, 3 minutes is about something that power-wise is kind of minimum and still allows kind of reasonable tracking of, you know, how often does the user change their state. So it's all about kind of duty cycling. And on newer devices where there's sensor batching, then we can do that kind of, like normally we have to wake up and we have to do a detection at the time that we wake up. So we don't really know what happened in the last 3 minutes. We were completely asleep, everything was off. on newer devices than with Excel batching, when we wake up, we actually have the whole history and we can process the whole history.
Okay.
So you mentioned a couple times Google Play services, and I know that some of the location services are available on core platform and new APIs are added in new releases, the way it typically happens, but other parts are available through Google Play services. So what determines where they go? Like what set of functionality is in each camp?
Yep. So we've tried to put pretty much all the location APIs in Google Play services. And even there's like, if you try and use kind of the older platform APIs that used to, like you used to be able to say, ask for network location just directly. So ask for like sort of Wi-Fi and cell tower. You can still do that through the platform APIs, but those will just go like kind of trampoline over to the Google Play services. So everything tries to be kind of a one central spot where we have all our location algorithms. And really the advantage is that, you know, it goes all the way back to Gingerbread and we can constantly make updates to the algorithm, make it better, and then kind of all developers benefit from it. So that's really kind of the model we're trying to follow, where we just, you know, being able to push new updates to this code very quickly and being able to just change our models and kind of put them on the phone and not have developers even have to change anything. They just use the existing APIs they're using. That's been sort of a really good model. Okay.
And then if they build against the newer APIs that you've released in the latest version of Google Play services, then there's gonna, we're going to detect, you know, that device doesn't have that version and download the new version.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Can you explain, you know, when I do a location request, what is it that I get back? Is it like a 3D point in space? Or is it like a longitude, latitude, altitude, or what is it that I get back?
Yeah, so you get back a location object. Depending on how the location was computed, there might be more or less information, right? So we always return a longitude, latitude, and accuracy, right? So basically like 2D location and like estimate of how likely do we think that, so like basically how big
that's
of a circle should
you put around
this?
That map can sort of show me a range for how confident, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So those are kind of the three values that are sort of guaranteed to be there. And then if the location came from GPS, we can usually get more information. So altitude is one of them that GPS can sometimes provide, and bearing as well. So like what direction are you currently heading? So for a navigation app, that's really useful because that you usually want to show kind of an arrow as to where the user is pointing.
I see. And so if I want to go from there to getting like a zip code, if you're in the US, or if I want to get like nearby businesses or parks or whatever, do we have APIs for that as well?
Yes. So there's a reverse geocoding API. It's in the platform, and the idea there is, yeah, basically just pass in a longitude, latitude, and it will tell you, like, here's the address that you're currently at.
Cool.
That's very cool. That's also Google Play Services is one of the
one of the most things behind.
What's that?
Yeah. It's basically the thing that will do the request.
So, like, if you're building like a movie listings app, you would first get the location, then figure out the zip code, and from there use that to figure out the movie theaters or something like that, right?
That's right.
Okay, got it.
Huh.
Interesting.
That's very cool. I got to get links for all these things and put them in the show notes.
Cool, that sounds good.
So I was a big fan of Latitude, the app that basically let you, you know, have your friends and family contribute locations. And I guess a lot of that is now in Google Plus. Is that true?
The location is there. Yeah, it's called Location Plus. So you can still see your friends on a map through that app. It works a little bit. We talked about kind of this background use case for location, where you have something that has to be kind of continuously on, but not spending too much power. Right. So that's when we try and really focus on and make sure that it works really well and be super low power. And from a location perspective, they're kind of a client and they, you know, they'll say, okay, once a minute I want location computations, or once every 10 minutes, something like that, right?
Right. So I think that one of the things that Latitude did, you know, towards the end was that, you know, if someone were to look at your location, then it would actually get that device to do a more accurate location. Is that something we still do? Because that seemed to be really useful. Like, I don't want my GPS to spin up when my phone is in my pocket. But if my wife is looking to see where am I on my commute,
then I want it
to just, you know, on her behalf, basically go and actually do more pinpoint location. Is that something we do?
Yep. Yeah. So this is it's called internally Oven Fresh is the name of that. You know, we want the freshest possible location, right? When somebody gets it. So that is something you do, and it, you know, you can do with a GCM ping, right? Where the app says, okay, like if somebody just loaded your friends list, so send out a ping for that. So it's a pretty useful way to sort of get at kind of a super fresh location. We have kind of multiple different services usually that want some form of location. If you think of Google Now as like, that's something that really, really cares about having this kind of always on sort of background location. That way you can do things like figure out your commute today. Like I understand what your commute normally is, and here's how it, here's what it looks like. So these apps can kind of all work together to use kind of share the same location and share kind of one power cost across the system.
Right. So with Latitude also, there was like this very interesting location dashboard where I can sort of see how far I'd traveled. You know, I think it would, the unit of measure was like how many trips to the moon or something like that is how it, yep, how yep. it did it, right? Do we still offer something like that anywhere?
Yep. Yeah. So that dashboard is still up and you should still be able to use it. So,
oh, same so URL.
Still, same. Yeah. Should still be there.
Okay.
And yeah, basically a lot of that data, like that's kind of, there's one repository for all of this data that it's kind of background location data. So if Latitude wants location data or if Google Now wants location data, we should have this one central place where you can kind of look at it, have a dashboard to delete points, have a dashboard to kind of just get some analysis and get some interesting insights as to your
location. Deleting points is really useful. In fact, you know, this is not really as much of a question for you as a plea to developers out there, but you know, I've used some of these exercise apps, right? And sometimes when I'm starting the run, it doesn't have a good GPS location, and then halfway through the run, it gets a GPS location. But then, you know, it thinks that I ran 5 miles in 2 seconds, right? Because it finally moved. Mm. And sometimes I forget to turn the thing off when I'm done, so then it starts including my drive. You know, so few of these apps let me go in there and actually tweak the data and saying, well, you know, please compute a smarter location for me. Or sometimes, you know, the phone was, I don't know, for some reason, not recording locations the whole time, right? And so it does like these crazy jumps across lakes and whatnot, where it probably ought to like look at the topography and figure out where I really moved. So I think the dashboard actually lets me do this, right? I can edit my Google location history, but
yep,
not my runs.
Yeah, I guess it'll be a little bit app specific, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
Unless we can make it really easy, if there was like a widget in Google Play Services for editing, you know, a series of locations that developers can easily just embed in their apps.
I like that. Yeah, or we could actually make it easier, maybe for developers to filter location. Like filtering location is a really hard problem, right? Because you do get all these sources of kind of noisy location, right? Like there's a bit of a physics problem behind it, and anytime you get to that level, there's going to be issues, right? You're going to get like bad Wi-Fi drivers that or just occasionally you're in an environment and. Some device will send out like a really expensive signal that takes out the Wi-Fi and like the RF environment in that area. So then you can't really compute a location. So we jump to a cell tower, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, the Fuse location provider's job is to try and filter out as much of this as possible and give you kind of a smooth location across. So that if you are doing a tracking app, like the location should be pretty good on top of that.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about the underlying technology, the location, as well as the APIs. I was sort of curious about what. Exciting pieces of hardware have been out, you know, recently. Like, what's the stuff you've been working with over the last couple of years? Just provides exciting capabilities, either you know, resolution of GPS or lower power sensors or whatever. Like, what is the state of the art?
So some of the new, new GPS chips are kind of interesting. Right? So they allow us to do more batching. So batching, I think, has been a kind of a key thing for new hardware, where we should now be able to do sort of. Like, let's try to do everything in a batch so that the main CPU almost never wakes up. So you can basically, we're trying to do that with things like Wi-Fi, GPS, sensors. So I have kind of everything just batch itself. And then when we wake up, we have all the information. So that's kind of one part of hardware that's really sort of evolved and gotten better.
Does that mean everything has its own sort of internal queue so it can actually cache the information? Whereas before it was just like, here I am.
That's right. That's exactly it. And it has kind of its internal queue of that. And it's got the ability usually to wake up the application processor to say like, I've got this information now. Like, here's an interrupt, wake up and sort of hear some info. There's also some new hardware sensors. There's something called a significant motion detector. And that one's basically this accelerometer chip. It can run at super, super low power, and you can say, just register for this sensor and wake me up when you see that there's significant motion, right? And if the device is just like sitting still on the desk, nothing happens. And we don't have to wake anything up. Everything just stays asleep. And we just kind of turn everything off and tell that chip, run, right? And tell me when something happens. And then as soon as there's motion, then that chip wakes up the CPU and says, there's something going on. You probably should check location again. So there's some nice things around there for hardware. There's also some things around so assisted GPS. One of the challenges with GPS is that it takes a long time to get time to first fix, basically. That it needs to usually, if it's a cold start, where it's just you take out a phone and it doesn't really have any other information, it has to sit there for like usually several minutes trying to figure out like this is its current location, because it basically needs to get information from satellites, figure out where those satellites are so that it can compute its location. So that's really challenging. So the nice thing about assisted GPS is the way it works is basically it if you have a rough sense of where you are, so just based on cell towers or now based on Wi-Fi as well, you can send that to a server and ask the server, okay, you roughly know where I am now. Tell me which satellites I should be seeing. Where are they? That sort of thing, and that can be sent to the phone within a second or so. So then the phone can use that to bootstrap GPS and get a really quick lock.
I have noticed that when I'm flying, it takes a while on the ground before it gets smart. But it seems like Google Now already knew what flight I was on. It seems like it could send to my phone, you know, this information as well.
I like the idea of the phone like taking a while in the morning to sort of figure out where it's at.
I can totally relate.
Yeah. Whenever I actually go on a trip, like the first couple of mornings I wake up in the hotel, I'm completely disoriented for a while. It's nice to know that my phone feels the same.
So how come that's still, like, it's been like that forever, right? Is that some sort of physical limitation? Why does it take minutes for it? Because I'm sure it's not just computation, because, I mean, they've gotten so much faster at computation, right? Is it that it just has certain timeouts in the protocol that it waits for?
It's a union thing.
Okay.
Something like that, yeah. Part of it is basically that you need to kind of download information about where the satellites are, where their orbits are, that sort of thing. And that information, like if you don't have a network connection, if you're not doing assisted GPS, all actually comes from the satellite. And that takes like 30 seconds to a minute for that to slowly send out a signal that the GPS chip is just listening for to get enough information to do computation. So a lot of
it's
it comes from
that. It's like in a tens of baud again.
Yep. So that's where really the limit comes from. But you know, with network, then you can fix that. Mm-hmm.
So recent stuff that is out in the public that people should be taking a look at? Well, let me see. We had an L developer preview, but of course most of your APIs are in Google Play services. So I don't know. What's the new hot stuff that people should jump on?
So really focusing on sort of the two main location APIs we have now. So the Fuse location provider, and there's new parameters in there that we want people to look at, things like this minimum displacement to save power. And basically just looking at the location mode. If there's still, like there were also platform APIs that we used to have, right? If you're still working on those, have a look at the Fuse location provider because that's really, it's gonna make it a lot easier to merge between GPS and Wi-Fi, that sort of thing. The other API would be the geofencing API.
Yep.
So in Google Play services, we have that API as well. That one's really nice for basically the idea is if you want to set a bounding box around an area and be told when you enter or exit that area, use the geofencing API. So you can think of it as, you know, oh, tell me when I'm at a particular Starbucks. If an app has a database of where multiple Starbucks are, they can register and say, just like, wake me up when I'm at a Starbucks. And the geofencing service will take care of trying to do that with like minimum power possible. So doing like, oh, you're really far from a geofence. I don't need to compute anything right now. Oh, you're approaching a geofence. Okay, let me compute things a little faster so that I can get kind of a better transition when I like really accurately detect exactly the moment you got in. It uses things like activity recognition to say, okay, well, you're currently walking, so even though you're kind of close to that geofence, you're not going to enter it yet, so I can do things at lower power, or like, oh, you're in a car, I should probably do things a little faster because you're going to be getting closer faster to the geofences, that sort of thing. So it really takes care of the power management of figuring out when you enter an area and exit an area as well.
So if I understand that correctly, could I also do that if it was like a Pete's instead of a Starbucks?
I think you could, yes.
I think for coffee, you probably are already like thinking of it the whole way there. So it's not a realistic example.
I like it though. I like the example. As long as I could do it for Pete's. Okay, yeah.
Definitely do. I mean, okay. I can check the API to make sure, but I think we're,
All right. I'm out of questions. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't happen to ask about.
I think that's good. We covered a lot of the API, so I'm pretty happy.
Cool. Definitely a lot of links to post and a lot of stuff for me to go look at. Tori, you got any ideas?
I'm excited to actually go and try it.
Yeah. Right. Very cool.
Do some location editing.
Excellent.
That's my plan.
I got to learn about that dashboard thing. All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, guys.